Okay, here we go. Something. We can't hijack something, your brain.
Okay, here we go. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Something Something Cast.
Something Something Cast.
I'm James Hatton with
Podcast Rob.
Hello, sir.
How you doing?
I am well. I am, since this is an out-of-time episode, this is somewhere in the ether of our history of episodes. We don't know when this is occurring.
Right.
I'm now sitting on my yacht, having won the Fear Project. And I'm
really?
Having... Yes, isn't it?
Because the first Fear Project didn't pay that much. Now, of course, that yes. You know, it's gotten bigger than the Hunger Games.
I've won three of them in a row. I'm the only triple crown winner.
The triple crown winner. Somehow, this statement is going to come back and bite us in the ass.
Totally gonna.
No, this is one of our... In the past, we have tried to... keep on the down low what episodes we've done to kind of put on the shelf for when we need them in a pinch.
We're in the middle of a contest.
We're running our own contest, so we don't know what wave this may fall within. We don't know which version of our contest this may fall within. It might be our second or third. Who knows? But I will say
our Hunger Games contest.
Hatton has had the brilliance to say we will post-edit something at the end of this episode relevant to anything we will currently have going on.
Brilliant.
When this episode airs.
That was a genius
idea. Which means you are either stuck listening to this entire episode or you will have to take that little white dot at the bottom of your screen and slide it all the way to the right.
But then why? Do you think anybody just listens to us for the contests?
Seeing as we haven't done one before as of the time we're recording this, I'd have to say no.
Fair enough. So why don't you relay to the audience what this episode is about?
Well, this episode is very unlike the Something Something Cast, because this episode we are focusing on one-hit wonders.
I see. Okay. Because it's going to be good.
No, because one-hit wonders, typically, they had one big flash-in-the-pan thing, and then they went away, never to be heard from again,
yes.
Fading off into relative obscurity. Since obscurity is our wheelhouse... We will not be fading off into obscurity. We embrace it wholeheartedly. It's where we plant our flag.
Even though we've done, you know, 60, 70 plus some odd episodes.
We just had our fourth year anniversary,
exactly.
You know, at the Wild Pig 3 2 weeks ago.
Brilliant.
Chris has since closed down Wild Pig 2, opened up 3 and
which,
4.
Which is in a giant robot.
Exactly.
Chomps through New Jersey and delivers.
None of that is true.
No. Like it would be.
Well, I meant more about that he closed down Wild Pig Comics.
We can't talk about the robot that Chris is building.
Yeah, exactly. That we can talk about all we want, just not the...
So, One Hit Wonders, it's a bit of a weird topic, because I know we both had a similar experience going and looking at lists online and doing our research.
Yeah, depending on what list you look at, there's weird classifications for what a one-hit wonder is. Billboard seemed to list it as... If somebody had a song that got higher than 15 on the Billboard Top 40, but never again
right.
got that high, it was considered a one-hit wonder. But then you had bands that were like typically in the 20s or 30s and had 15 albums out that were considered one-hit wonders.
Yeah, it's strange. It's a weird mix because there's one, I have a whole list of songs that I was like, does that make, like, Chumbawamba. Tub Thumping,
sure.
Was a huge hit, party hit, etc.
Yep.
Those guys have like 6 albums.
Right.
They're all really good.
Right.
Very different from Tub Thumping. They're
sure.
like folky, punky, anarchist type music.
Right.
But Tub Thumping was their one-hit wonder. They didn't have that hit and reach obscurity. They're still out there pumping out albums and pumping out concerts.
Sure.
So, do they count? Totally, because Tub Thumping is the one song anybody knows from Chumbawamba when you ask, like, Jay Random Schmo walking down the
right,
street.
Right.
Doesn't matter that I can sing Jesus in Vegas
sure.
or two other songs that I love by them. So yeah, they fit.
Yeah, they fit the technical aspect of it. When I went through and did my list, I really tried to say, can I think of two other songs by the artist that did this, regardless of how good they may or may not have done monetarily or on the pop charts? If I cannot, then they count on my list. And the only exception is the last one that I listed, and that's only because I bought their whole album for that one song and ended up really liking the rest of their album, much to many of my friends' chagrin.
I had similar ones that I put down. Like, I know during one of our episodes I mentioned The Refreshments. I think it was their Desert Island. The Refreshments had one hit, which was...
That was 20 years ago.
I know, and now I'm trying to remember it.
Never going to get old.
Anyway, The Refreshments had a one-hit wonder. I love this song, but I also fucking love every album they've done because of that one song went about the album, etc., etc.
Yep.
So we did our best to... I think most of mine are pretty on spot with they had one hit and then...
Yeah, no, I agree. I think mine are too.
Yeah, yours are too. So, yeah, one-hit wonders, I think. This is The Oneaters, as you were.
There you go.
Did you ever see that movie?
No.
That Thing You Do?
No.
Tom Hanks?
Nope.
Oh, the band is called... They figure they're going to have... They call themselves the Wonders, and at the end of the movie, Tom Hanks is kind of looking at them going, well, they were exactly what they said they were, one-hit wonders. But somebody keeps mispronouncing them and calling them the Oneaters.
Oh, I gotcha.
Anyway, fun movie.
Okay.
It's a stupid little 90s flick.
Fair enough.
Other interesting point about one-hit wonders that I figured out.
All right.
There are no more. They don't happen anymore because of the internet. I went and I looked at years 2000s and years 2010s of lists and stuff. I have no idea who any of those fucking people were, except for, like, the Had a Bad Day song.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's no MTV, so there's no, like, pop chart. Everybody just kind of goes, I listen to this neuro-pop grunge velociraptor punk. And
guess you're... There's so many different venues in which you can get music now that it's kind of hard to be a one-hit wonder because Six Degrees, somebody's heard of it somewhere. You know, it may not have gotten on a chart, but are there... Yeah, I don't even know if there are really any... Does Billboard have a chart anymore?
I'm sure they do, I'm sure it's geared much... Well, I do know that, like, local radio and whatnot is geared a lot more towards dance music.
Sure.
Spanish music, hip-hop.
Right. But, like, is the Rick D's Weekly Top 40 still around?
No, probably not.
Who knows?
With a bullet. So, yeah, it's...
Is Rick D's still around? Jesus Christ.
So, yeah, I do notice
Methuselah.
That... Our music stops somewhere around where we do, about 1996.
Yeah, it really is. It really is indicative of kind of the times we grew up in.
Yeah, they are. Your list is about 5 years younger than mine, which about makes sense.
Older, yeah.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
So please, let's hit it.
Well, I'm going to start with something that, again, there's a good chunk of my generation and probably a good chunk of Hatton's generation that the minute this song starts, everybody immediately gets into a stance, no matter where you are, bus stop, quick check, at your desk at work, ho, 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 ho. Ha! Everybody breaks into a kung fu stance. Kung fu fighting.
Yeah, it's a great song.
I looked up, you know, a lot of these lists I went through and said, okay, what other albums has this person done? And he did one other album.
Okay, I don't even know if he sings it. I just know the song.
It's one album, but like seven of the songs on the album are like Kung Fu Fighting, the Kung Fu Fighting remix, Kung Fu Fighting and Other Love Songs. Like, is the name of a song. So it's just like, this guy knew going in, I got one shot, and I am going to ride this horse until it dies.
It's a song that everyone knows. It's played at every stupid... Like, it's at every wedding.
Oh, yeah.
It's played at every New Year's Eve party on whatever channel you're watching.
Yep.
I can't say that you don't go to a public event in some capacity and you hear... Di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di kidding.
Yeah, it is.
Are you looking it up to find out who sings it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to find out the year and everything, too. It's Carl Douglas.
Oh, there you go.
Kung Fu Fighting.
I loved it when he fought Rocky.
No, it's Carl Weathers.
Oh.
probably not much difference. I'm just pulling up the Wikipedia page right
here. Yeah, please.
If I was smart, I would have done this before.
Haha, and now that we're discussing it, I can do it on the sly while we're talking.
Carl Douglas, Kung Fu Fighting. It's a disco song released as a single in 74 on the cusp of the chop sake film craze. It's an actual line on Wikipedia.
Yeah,
so
well,
just wanted to throw
that
out there. Eventually rose to the top of the British and American charts, in addition to reaching number one on the soul singles chart. Yeah, the B-side was Gamblin' Man.
Everybody remembers. Nobody remembers
Gamblin' Man. Yeah, no, not so much.
Well, to jump away from that, I will go with my earliest one on my list, which I think is probably... It's usually when you look at these lists, it's number one.
I'm sorry,
more.
I have to throw this out
more
here.
More Carl Weathers information.
It's listing the weekly charts from 1974 to 1975.
Okay.
This thing hit number one in Australia, Austria, Belgium, Canada, France, Germany, Ireland, Netherlands, South Africa, UK, US Billboard, US Cashbox, and US Record World.
So,
holy crap.
Well, it was 1974. There was two radio stations. They were both AM, and the other one was playing fucking Imus.
Yeah, I guess that is true.
It's the reason, it's that when you go, Gone with the Wind made a lot of money. Well, you could have either watched that or Nosferatu.
Wow.
Well. So for my first one, I'm going to go with... usually this is the one that's like number one on all of the One-Hit Wonders list for good reason. The MTV, kind of the music video. Everybody
sure.
knows it. It's fucking wonderful. And oh no, you just made a face. More Carl Weathers?
It's just showing what came on the chart, like what was popular on the chart before this song.
Okay.
And what was popular on the chart after this song.
It says nothing. Radio
preceded by different. If You Love Me, Let Me Know by Olivia Newton-John.
Okay.
And succeeded by Longfellow Serenade by Neil Diamond. So I'll give you just a little bit of insight on the time frame, time period. Mads is just over there shaking her head.
So like
in embarrassment. They're recording this in my living room. I'm gonna have to vacuum when they're done.
She said we're gonna bug bomb. What's even funnier is like comparatively, Kung Fu Fighting's heavy metal like, to those
yeah.
other two
no, that's
songs.
True.
Like people were just craving entertainment. Jeez. So mine is again one of the greatest music videos I think ever made for the mid MTV generation. Cartoons mixed with real people. Guy with a crowbar. I'm sorry, a giant wrench. Girls trapped in a comic book. Take on Me.
Yep.
Everybody knows that stupid riff. Yeah, and no one can hit that note. That one.
It is very note. Painful.
You have a crazy range, so
I on occasion can hit it, but it is not tonal and it is not. Pretty.
I was going to say, and not requested.
The only people that I've heard hit that note are Real Big Fish.
Right.
And they don't do it in the same singing way that A-ha does. It's more of a scream. But,
One does in ska. Funny enough, there's not too many covers of it for being such a kind of a famous song.
Yeah, no, I agree. But at the time, it was... The video was ridiculous.
Amazing.
Because, again,
it was
live action and almost like M.C. Escher pencil drawing of the cartoon strip being drawn around the people that it's in.
And you see her, and then the camera pans to the side, and through the magic window, you see him.
Yep.
Have you ever watched the literal music video?
Yes.
Oh, fucking wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
Magic frame.
Yeah. Magic no, good frame. Stuff, though. And, like, whenever this song starts... People start singing along with it, and then it gets to the guitar solo, and everybody does the same thing, at least my circle of friends, where they all pantomime, like, drawing really fast. Because now we have to draw the music video, because it's a guitar solo, so we have nothing else to do.
It's like the Bohemian Rhapsody guitar solo.
Exactly.
Everybody just headbangs.
Yep, absolutely.
Like, there's not even too much to say about it. It's aha. Like, they did that.
Yeah, and
uh-huh.
that's it.
Yeah, I pulled them up on the Wikipedia. So the song came out in 1980, best albums of 1986. So other people know other songs from them, but the song has legacy and impact because they have a huge fucking list of things that they did. They have tons of stuff that they songs they sang and people that blah 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 that worked with them, but that was it. They were their one hit was Aha, Take on Me. And that was that. They, let me see, 1982 to 1994. That's how long they performed. They were like cutting edge fucking new wave. They have to 94, then 98 to 2010, and they're performing out again now.
Right.
55 million records, and we know them for Magic Frame.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, one hit wonder, sorta, kinda, and they're probably not in anywhere but Oslo, like, I'm sorry, rather, anywhere but America, because in Oslo, they're huge.
Right, right.
So, Take on Me.
I am reading about my next song, just getting some take on it.
Even now, in our 17th year, we still
exactly,
do no
we still, not until the time of. This song came out the year before Take on Me. Again, very 80s, and yeah, it's almost kind of indicative of the 80s, because it took over a good chunk of the mid-80s. The artist, Falco. The song, Rock Me Amadeus.
Eat me, I'm a Danish. I'm not going to tell the story.
Yeah, I honestly just don't think that song was ever written.
Eat me, I'm a Danish.
Those of you who were alive in the 80s know very well about this song. Those of you who weren't, why are you listening to this podcast? Where the fuck are your parents? How could you possibly be doing this? There were two different edits. There was the original version and there was the Canadian version, which I find humorous because the Canadian version is sung in Austrian. Why it's called the Canadian edit, I don't know, but there are two different versions. The American version that we got was just a lot of the chorus and an announcer basically talking about the major life points of
Amadeus.
Of Mozart, yeah. You know, in 1781, he composed the Magic Flute. Boom, 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 boom. In 1785, you know, and it just goes through his whole thing. Then 1985, Austrian rock singer Falco records Rock Me Amadeus, and it's just this big, huge, like.
Is there more in the is the other version?
The Canadian version, there's actually lyrics that he sings in Austrian.
Okay.
Yeah, there's actually a song, and not just Amadeus, Amadeus, yeah. Amadeus, which everybody knows from the American version.
Of course. But I just like the idea that he's version. Singing, like, if you were listening to the other one, it's Bismarcky. Like, those are the way that he's...
Yeah, it's... Yeah, like, that's, sort of.
If you listen to the other one, that's what they're singing. For some reason, they're singing the Bismarcky song.
But the Canadian one was actually... It was actually kind of cool. If you bought the single, I mean, that was the B-side of it.
Okay.
So you got both versions of it.
It's another one of those things where... This is what they're putting all their weight on.
Yeah, exactly. He had, like, one other song even remotely of note called Vienna Calling, but he didn't last very long because he died at the age of 40 in a car accident.
Oh.
So very kind of Richie Valens, sort of, yeah. Except for, you know, except for the lacking of fame.
Richie Valens had a handful of hits.
Yeah, but none of them were Rock Me Amadeus, damn.
No, they were not. They were all...
But it was big bigger. On MTV. It was Canadian version was big on MTV because the video was all these people in like their Victorian garb, and while he's pounding away on this piano, and there's a guy with an electric violin playing the violin solo and everything.
I remember that music video, yep. And it's the reason because I was so young when it came out that I get it confused. Like I always think of the Falco song with the Bismarcky song because also Bismarcky is sitting there in the Victorian wig in front of the piano,
right.
Looking like an asshole on purpose.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Almost like he's parodizing the Falco video.
A little bit, okay.
Yeah.
I can take that. But that was one of mine.
Stupid connection.
I got hooked on it. I mean, come on, I was born in 1970, I was 15 years old. The song was amazingly popular, it was on the radio all the time, which was one of the few places you could hear music right. In 85.
It was a fun song.
It was all over the place.
And it's weird and different compared to what else is going on. There's a guy talking, and it's just a heavy-ass beat with a really catchy chorus.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Jumping forward to The year is later. 1999, 2000-ish. This actually is a more recent one. This is one of those ones where, like, real punk fans and real rap fans really love the band. It's my number one.
Okay.
And but that's because it's a super group of, like, a bunch of talented sons of bitches.
Chickenfoot? Never mind.
No.
I'll explain.
I know I got it.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, Tim Armstrong from Rancid and Op Ivy put together a band called The Transplants. They had one hit. They have two albums. Honestly, I've listened to both albums. It's way too heavy into just a sound I'm not into. But these guys are, Tim Armstrong's a musical fucking genius. Rancid and Op Ivy, whether or not you like punk, pretty influential. The one song is Diamonds and Guns, which is this kind of, you would remember it from the Pantene commercial. Woohoo! Bonnet, 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 woohoo!
Oh, okay.
Bonnet. Yeah, and it's just nothing but rappy. It's like three different dudes all rapping, all giving just about how they're going to steal diamonds, they're going to steal guns. They're singing a song for all the guys in prison. Fucking fantastic song.
Gotcha. Okay.
I had the single first, and then it was just, it's still on constant replay on mixed CDs in my car. I'm sure Madison is nodding sagely. She can't hear.
Funny, she's got her headphones on and she's bobbing along to her own music, so it makes it look like she's just totally into and agreeing to what we're talking about.
Diamonds and guns, diamonds and guns. You would like it, given your love propensity for enjoying mixed rap and rock.
Well, it's funny because I didn't know what the hell you were talking about until you were explaining the song, and I'm just like, okay, now I know exactly what that musical hook is.
Yeah, because they sold it around a little bit. And it got airplay pretty much everywhere. It was on the rock stations. It was even on, like, kind of the middle 95.5 PLJ sort of music station, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You can find it everywhere. So, yeah, they're one of those bands that the Transplants kind of, they go off, they do their other projects, then they come back together. It's Travis Barker from Blink-182, a handful of other people. Vic Ruggiero from The Slackers, Matt Freeman from Rancid. And, yeah, they're just I want to say it's like hip hop. It's rap rock. It's so different.
Right.
But that was big during the rap rock phase. That was when it was Limp Bizkit and Korn everywhere. So it fit the bit. It was just much more raw.
Yeah. No, I got you.
So The Transplants, Diamonds and Guns. Diamonds and Guns. What do you got?
My next song, I will also jump ahead a little bit. To a band from 1993.
Oh, okay.
The band Four Non Blondes. The song "What's Up,"
which parodized by everyone. At this point.
I always found it funny that the phrase "What's Up" is never mentioned in the song whatsoever.
And most people still have no idea what you're talking about.
They call it "What's Going On" because that's the chorus of the phrase.
Or hey,
however, they changed the name of the song because they didn't want it to be confused with Marvin Gaye's song "What's Going On" from 1971.
Oh, smart! I never even thought
about
that.
So they changed it to "What's Up." Again, very catchy, very kind of anthem-y for the
soulful
time. Very, very alternative anthem kind of song to it.
This is a taste of the 90s.
It's funny because I was reading some of the reviews about this, and they said there were some people who felt that this felt like a marketing wizard's concept for making a number one song. Do we have alternative, you know, semi-gothy kind of punkish kind of chicks that look good on camera? Yes.
Yeah.
Do we have a song ballad that's almost a throwback to 60s revolution songs? Yes. Do we have some sort of vague political referencing in the songs that could hit either side of any fence so anybody can embrace it? Yes. Like, we're checking off all these boxes.
That's fair.
But if you listen to it, it's kind of fair enough. She's got a raspy, screamy voice, but she's got a good melodic voice.
Oh, my God.
When
it's
it
soulful.
The chorus,
deep.
She's got a lot of good range to it. I've done this song at karaoke. No lie.
I have no doubt.
I enjoy doing it. It's within my range. It was easier when I was younger. From the Bound Brook Hotel that you and I have told stories about in the past.
We have.
I was very, very, very wasted one night, and I got up and I did this song. And as I'm walking back to my seat, this drunk chick comes walking over from the bar, and she manages to stammer out, "You sounded just like them." I pat her on the shoulder and I said, thank you very much. And she shook her head and she goes, I don't know if I meant that as a compliment. And I was still like, well, fair enough. Either way, that's fine. But such a good song. And again, it's one of those songs everybody knows. The minute it comes on, that little guitar riff in the front, acoustic guitar, everybody knows exactly what it is.
And the sort of moany voice in the background.
Yep.
Did it. It's also gained a certain amount of acclaim in the internet universe because for some reason there is a video of He-Man singing it.
Really?
Yes. So it has He-Man with his in one of the 5 or 6 frames of He-Man, because there's only 5 or 6 fucking scenes in the whole cartoon.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Where there's a rainbow background, and he kind of rears his head back in this sort of ecstatic thing. You can find him singing the chorus of the song for an hour. You know, there's a bunch of YouTube videos that, like, listen to this thing for an hour. Yeah, it's just He-Man singing this for an hour.
Okay.
Hey, it's the techno version, though, so it's...
All right.
Yeah. So it has a certain internet resonance for some reason.
I'm just reading about the lead singer of Four Non Blondes, Linda Perry.
Yep, yep.
She did go on to do some amazing producer credits. Christina Aguilera is Beautiful. Gwen Stefani, What Are You Waiting For? Adam Lambert's A Loaded Smile. Grace Slick, Knock Me Out. So, yeah, she did do a lot of that. And she also signed and distributed James Blunt in the United States. So even though she... You know, left the singing behind after the one-hit wonder of Four Non Blondes. She did all right for herself in the music industry.
90s was a weird one. When I was going through lists of songs, like, I went through my music list, and I have a fairly extensive playlist that I go through, and I went and I looked at the songs that I have, like, large numbers on. I'm like, it's a one-hit wonder, but is it just me being, like, stupid obscure me? Because I have a stupid knowledge for alternative one-hit wonders. Like, Dig. Was that a good one? Or, you know, Jimmy's Chicken Shack, who had the one song, What Do I Do? OMC, How Bizarre? The Breeders? Like, there's tons of... 90s were perfect for one-hit wonders, because everything was on MTV.
How Bizarre got me, just because... When you listen to it, you're like, okay, guys got kind of like... It was a different voice for the time, which is why it stuck out and kind of resonated. And it was that kind of bubblegum pop kind of, you know, shape. But then you see the video and you realize why the guy had kind of a weird voice. Because Freddie Mercury would look at this guy and go, dude, you got some teethuses. It's like he had 4 chiclet teeth and 1 tooth that was the size of a couch cushion. And it's kind of why when you listen to his voice, it's got this weird kind of lisp to it as he's singing, and it's probably because he just can't fit all his teeth in his mouth.
That's one of those songs I can sing. Like, a lot of these stupid one-hit wonders, I know... Sometimes I don't even remember how I remember the words to these, because I clearly don't remember anything. Right. I think the show has proven that. But somewhere deep, like, in sketched, I know all of the words to Primitive Radio Gods.
Okay.
You know, been downhearted, baby.
Well... OMC's How Bizarre was my favorite pop-up video.
Okay.
Because they showed a clip, and God, I can't tell you. Like, there's certain things I just wish I couldn't remember.
Fair enough.
I don't know why this stuff sticks in my head. As they're filming the video, they're lip-syncing to the music, obviously. And they show an arrow to, like, a little 1980s boombox that's in the back seat behind the people that are sitting in the back seat between them. And that's the boombox that's playing the song that they're lip-syncing to.
Gotcha.
Policeman taps his shades. Is that a Chevy 69? Bloop! 67 Chevy. Points to the car. When they're in the house at the end and the room is covered with, like, those circus posters.
Sure.
The budget was so low, according to pop-up video, that they couldn't actually buy the posters. So they found them black and white online, printed them out, and spent a whole day with the cast and colored pencils coloring the posters in.
How bizarre.
So they could put... How bizarre. How bizarre. How bizarre.
But that's not even the one.
Not even the song you're talking
about. No, it's just a good one.
Tangent.
I literally wrote a list of songs that were... I went through the list, and I'm like, is this a good enough one? Like, I listened to them a lot. Like, Teenage Dirtbag was almost on my list, but I chose against it. I love that fucking song.
Sure.
I didn't know that was a boy singing for years. Thought it was a girl. Until I one day was like, I'm going to watch the video, because it's got Mina Savari in it. Because it's from that movie that she was in with Pie Fucker. Not Angus. Might have been Angus. Anyway. But yeah, that music video came from that. So Mina Savari and Pie Fuckers in the music video. And then the guy singing them while they're in high school walking up to each other. And I'm like, it's a dude.
Okay.
You got two tickets for Ryan. That's a dude.
Okay, I'm with you.
Who the fuck?
How bizarre.
How bizarre. I chose Roll With Me from Delamitri. Do you remember this one?
Look around your world. It's such a... baby. Again, it's one of those head-bobbing kind of songs.
And a fucking creepy music video.
Well, yeah.
Because they're in baby carriages, and they're all... they have normal-sized heads.
Yep.
This was big in, like, when everybody was doing morphs in their music videos, and, like, let's fuck with computer CGI. So, yeah, they have their normal-sized heads, and they're wearing sunglasses and baby bonnets with fucking pacifiers, and they're singing the song as they're walking down in their little trams.
And somebody pitched that to the band as a great idea, and they said, let's do it.
Let's go. God damn it. It was probably Spike Jonze. Spike Jonze made all of the fucking crazy music videos.
Yeah, yeah.
He did the Weezer, Buddy Holly.
Yep.
Anyway.
And a lot of stuff for the jacket.
Yes, exactly. So this was 1995,
I think. Yeah, I think so.
Roughly, it topped, let's see, UK it topped number 3, and number 10 in the US. So... But they were British. I didn't even know that until just now looking at Wikipedia.
You could have put a gun to my head and I couldn't have told you that until you just told me.
And I have.
They didn't sound British, obviously.
But yeah, they lasted from 83 to 2002. Like, it amazes me looking at these fucking lists.
Jesus. And that's the only song we know them from. That's, I mean, this is kind of indicative of the shitstorm that one-hit wonders can be. We were successful musicians, my dentures are falling.
Yes, how bizarre.
That have paid our bills being successful musicians for over 20 years. This is the song people remember.
Yeah, it's. And I know you have one on your list that's kind of the famous version of that story. Like, we've been doing music forever, and you know us because of this one thing.
I do?
Yeah, you do. It's your I think it's your last one.
Oh, okay. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's... What's funny about this episode for us is that, like, you say the song and you go, yeah, I like that song.
Yeah, it's a good song. I obviously, I like it. It's on my list.
Yeah, it's Roll To Me.
Yeah, no, it's a good song. And I don't know how can...
The bridge is so fucking hot. I love that song.
Yeah, yeah. Musically, it's very pretty. It's a fun song.
Yeah.
It's a toe tapper.
And right now,
back
people
when people tapped their toes in the wacky 90s. Why did that affect you so much? Back when people tapped their toes,
because it's
nobody
like
does film it now because of the internet.
Because it's like film noir. Back when people tapped their toes and read the newspaper,
on the Lady Liberty and all the ships at sea.
She walked into my office, legs to the floor, like fuck.
Wow. It's a Perry Mason episode.
Thankfully, right now, everybody's ignoring us and listening to Delamitri in the bed.
Or they fast forward into the end to find the contest info. Oh,
why do they keep talking about a contest? The contest ended 3 fucking weeks ago.
That one?
Roll To Me.
I have gone on with another band. The lead singer of which had gone on to do his own albums afterwards, as many of these bands have done.
Much more famously as a solo artist.
Yep, released in 92. I don't know about much more famously. I think this one song would probably give it a run for their money.
Yeah, maybe
this one album, too.
Yeah, you're right. I just love that album.
1992, the album House of Pain, Fine Malt Lyrics.
It's a great name.
The song Jump Around. Again, one of those that still gets played... At bars, at nightclubs, at wedding parties.
And every white motherfucker gets on that dance floor.
And jumps.
And jumps like an asshole.
Absolutely.
I have been that asshole many a time.
Yep. Great song. I love the song. I love the band. The band was very cool. I could basically recite the entire album. The first album was very cool. Again, different at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Because while there wasn't a huge number of white rap artists that were making it very big at that time... These were different because they had the Irish twist to it. Now, whether or not they were actually Irish...
I'm sure they were.
Origin, New York City, New York.
That's pretty Irish.
Yeah.
It's either that or Italian.
It's an American hip-hop group. The group's name is a reference, obviously, to H.G. Wells' novel, The Island of Dr. Moreau, which is interspersed throughout the album.
Is it really?
Oh, in between songs, you'll hear, "He who breaks the law goes back to the house of pain." And then, like, another song will start.
I'm going to
sort of constantly taking little snippets from that that mention the house of pain. Because that's what it was. Anytime one of the creatures screwed up, they took him to the house of pain to punish him. That's what they called it.
What you're doing right now is you're taking 12-year-old Jamie.
Okay.
And you're connecting him to 30-year-old Jamie right now.
Okay.
And making me go, holy shit, something that I know of now, I had no fucking clue on when I first listened
to
this
stuff. Sure, no, absolutely, yeah.
Holy,
no,
I'm going to have to re-listen to that whole thing now just to... That's really badass.
Back to the house of pain. But lead singer Everlast went on to Whitey Ford Sings the Blues.
Which I love that album.
Great album. That was after like his car accident or something. Because not only did he obviously get rid of the accent because it wasn't needed anymore, but there was a big difference in the voice there too.
Much, much
deeper. Because of the surgeries and stuff, I think.
So throaty.
But they really embraced the Irish take on it. You know, Everlast, Danny Boy was part of the group. So a lot of, you know, Ta-ra, 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 Boondie. A lot of their songs, very Irish take. But Jump Around, if nobody else knows anything from House of Pain, the minute this intro starts, everybody knows what it is. Everybody's up on the dance floor jumping around like an idiot. But when they're supposed to, they wait until Jump Around.
Yeah,
and then everybody starts jumping.
Yeah,
nobody
exactly.
jumps until then.
No, until then you're doing classic, timely dances such
exactly.
as The Running Man and the Roger
or the Raj Thomas, you know, or you're attempting the rerun and failing badly.
Because no one can do the rerun.
Except
now,
rerun, yeah.
Well,
maybe Wayne Brady actually can do the rerun.
I'm sure.
I've seen him do it on Whose Line.
You can do the first, like, the jump step of the rerun. And and half the room goes.
And then the arms go and you whack yourself in the eye and then you trip and everything falls apart.
I have no ACL.
Four people are going, I know exactly what you're talking about. The rest of our listeners are going, what, the rerun? I don't.
Yeah.
Jump around. Jump around. Jump up. Jump up and get down.
Well, I jumped up. Eventually, I have to come down.
Yeah, true enough.
So for mine, wow, this guy's 50. He's like 60 years old now. That's crazy. So this song came out. What year did?
Here, I'm sorry. I'm just going to throw this out
please,
real quick
while I'm looking up when
in
this song
popular
came out.
Culture. The song has been featured in Mrs. Doubtfire, The Rookie, Daredevil, Rush Hour, Happy Gilmore, Kiss of Death, Black Hawk Down, Jack Reacher, and Turbo, as well as the television series My Name is Earl. It has also been featured at football games at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, University of North Carolina, San Francisco Giants, New York Mets, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, New England Patriots.
As if my name was Sega.
It became like the stadium anthem.
Yeah.
It became like the hip-hop stadium anthem. And if you wanted to get a crowd on their feet and they got tired of doing the wave, you blast this. And all of a sudden, everybody's hands in the air jumping around like an idiot.
Because it's a whole lot better than da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, it's a whole lot more thumpy. So, I didn't realize how old this song was. I actually thought this song was closer to the mid-80s. It is actually 1981, where... And it's so unique. Taco.
Oh,
with
yeah.
their hit of Putting on the Ritz. As lambasted famously in Young Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually, because it's... I always kind of thought this was one of those deep-in-the-new-wave kind of tracks. No, it's cutting-edge new wave.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it? I guess it's new wave. It's such a swingy sort of song, but it's just got it's got almost a swing beat to it. But it's got like five different voices in it. They're all the same dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Rounds up like a million dollars.
Well, again, he's trying to get that '50s kind of swing beat feel to it, and I mean, it was part of the song to be done that way.
I heard. I was.
It had the tap dance, the audio tap dance. Couldn't see him. You're just like, okay, there's obviously somebody with a pair of shoes and a piece of plexiglass right next to a microphone just banging those shoes on.
Or
there.
A Casio, and they're just being seen over and over. I was at Steampunk World's Fair, one of the conventions I do, and there was an electro swing DJ. And his, you know, sometimes you see a DJ and he uses the same two or three songs. They're
sure,
like signature
sure.
songs to kind of mix in. He used Putting on the Ritz as his In the Midst.
Okay.
So in between, like... two of the cool hippity-hoppity steampunky songs he was doing, you would hear, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, wow. And I'm like, that's Putting on the Ritz. And the next one, bon-ap-bon-ap-bon-ap.
Yep.
Every time, bon-ap-bon-ap-bon-ap-bon-ap. this is one of those songs that I think also, you hear it, and if you hear a middle part of it, you go, wait a minute, I know it from, oh, if you're blue, and you don't know where to go to.
All right.
And then everybody chimes in. Because we're all
Because you have to.
Nerds. Yes.
Nerds.
You have to. But this came out, what year did that come out?
81.
It's very similar in tone and sound, and it's not on any of our lists, but we do tangents. That's what we do.
What? How bizarre.
1979 song by an English band called M. Pop okay. music. That very same kind of nasally pop music. Talk about New York, London, Paris, music. Everybody talk about pop music. Talk about. Very, but again, very same kind of feel as the singer.
No, very much so.
From Taco. But yeah, he was definitely going for that swing feel. Yeah, there were trumpets and clarinets along with the synthesizers.
Yeah, all synth.
In putting on the Ritz.
Tons of synth in there, which is unusual.
The synth with the wobbly bars. You could do like the whole the wah-wah pedal with a keyboard.
Yeah, it's... And this song is one of the few that I think, out of many of our songs, actually, I think, holds the test of time. I think if this song was to pop out now, it would probably still do okay, just for its weirdness.
Somebody could do a period remake of this song, and I think it would work.
Yeah.
I think you're right on that respect.
I tend to think that that is correct. Maybe not this song precisely, but yeah, there's something weird about this one, because it's so unusual. Even when you look at like all the weird new wave stuff, the Cars, right. which was very synth-oriented, and...
You would have to do it as an homage, though. Like, Limp Bizkit couldn't do a cover of this song. But if somebody with a different, like, okay, just go with me here.
Fair enough.
Public Enemy. Take a Chuck D kind of voice.
All right.
But if they updated and modernized the synth and the sound and made the beat a little heavier, but tried to keep the music still kind of swingy in the background, I could very easily dressed up like a million. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They could
don't
bring
that
modernized.
Anymore, but yes.
No. But you can't reinvent the wheel on it. You have to echo the roots that this song came
Fair
from,
enough.
I think, in order for it to work.
I'm sure there's some amazing...
Don't do that again.
Sorry, it just came out of nowhere and hurt. I'm guessing there's a bunch of really cool mashups of Putting on the Ritz out there.
Oh, probably.
I'm going to have to go look, because I love, like, I'll find a song that I really, really like, and I will go and listen to 1,000 mashups of that one song,
yep.
and then I'm off and do something
else. If you guys come across any mashups, post them on the Facebook page.
Yes, of any of these songs.
Yeah,
or just
any
mashups
of them, absolutely.
You like.
There you go.
Fuck it. Maybe we'll do a mashup episode.
Ooh.
It's going to be weird, though, because then we have to explain the songs that we're...
Yeah, the original songs. And
your turn.
It's a Venn diagram of music. I'm going with my last group.
Hit it.
This group featured in the movie Benny and June. I can't hear this song without picturing Johnny Depp in his weird kind of...
Bowler hat.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's very kind of... It's a cross between Willy Wonka and the dude who sang, "We don't have to take our clothes off." Kind of weird, outfit-y
yep.
kind of thing.
Where he plays
and
like...
A little bit of Jimmy Hart, Mouth of the South thrown in.
It's true.
Jamming forks into two dinner biscuits and using them as feet to dance. I'm going to be 500 Miles by the Proclaimers.
Fantastic song.
When I wanted to buy this song, I went to find it on the Benny and June soundtrack. And all of the record towns, for those of you who are still familiar, or CD worlds, were completely sold out.
Did you check your local Sam Goody?
I did not.
Ah, well, see.
We're sold out of the Benny and June soundtrack.
It was a huge soundtrack.
Yeah. So I went and picked up Sunshine on Leith, which is the actual Proclaimers album that the song is from. And much to my friend's chagrin, I love every song on this album. The only other people who really know about this album in my circle of friends are people from across the pond and Australia, because they're a Scottish group, as is evident by their accent in 500 Miles. But if you listen to some of their other songs, the accent really just kind of comes out of nowhere.
So you have the wiki. When did they... The song was originally done like 5 years before Benny and June or something like that, right?
It was first released as the lead single from their 1988 album, Sunshine on Leith.
There you go. And Benny and June's like 93-ish. Somewhere there.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this was one of those songs where everybody sang it. And to this day, if... anybody goes, Somebody else will chime
in.
Yep.
Yeah, Benny and June, 93.
Oh, boom! Jamie remembers nothing except when he watched movies nonstop as a child.
No, that's good. But and the other thing is they're identical twins, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have a Pandora station that's just nothing but alternative music, and so sometimes it'll play the B-sides or the other tracks from bands. A lot of times you'll get stuff like other songs that the Proclaimers did. Proclaimers? Pretenders. Pretenders, Proclaimers. Which one is
Proclaimers
it?
Proclaimers is this group.
PR noises. And I've yet to hear a song by them I didn't like. I've never actually gone and just kind of said, I'm going to listen to all of that album. So totally worth it.
Okay.
I'm asking.
Oh, absolutely it is. No, absolutely. I'm sorry.
It's all good. You were reading.
No, absolutely it is. The song was written by the one brother in mid-87 while waiting to travel to a concert they were doing in Aberdeen. He was sitting at a piano waiting. He just started mucking around. The chords kind of came to him. He wrote the whole song in about 45 minutes. Said, oh, I thought it was kind of a good song, maybe a single, but had no idea how popular it was going to end up being.
Yeah, it's a timeless song. Did you see the Family Guy bit of that one where he's in the radio station with him, with the Proclaimers?
No.
They brought him in just to do the da-da-da-das.
Oh, okay.
So you can't hear them. They're singing in the booth. But you see Peter, and it's just silent, and he's just watching them. And then all of a sudden, da-da-da-da.
Nice.
Da-da-da-da. Very funny.
Very good. This is still also another popular song that still gets play.
Yeah, and everybody would sing it.
I love
this song.
Absolutely.
My last one,
I don't know where that voice came from,
is another one of those. This is actually the one I decided that, because this is one of my favorite one-hit wonders of all time.
Right.
Even though I do really love the band. It's the Toadies Possum Kingdom.
Okay.
Which, you tell people the name of it, and they go, Toadies Possum Kingdom? I got no fucking clue. Until you go, do you wanna die? And they go, oh, that one. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm not doing that face.
Oh, you're not doing that face at all.
No.
It starts to make up your mind. Make up your mind, and I promise you I'll treat you well. Nothing?
No.
All right. So,
sorry.
It's all good. You and I listen to different music.
Yeah, I fast-forwarded to the end of this episode to listen to the contest.
God damn it.
Such a jerk.
1994. The album is Rubberneck. It was the one hit they had on it. The song got like re-famous again when it was on Rock Band or Guitar Hero or one of those, because people refound it. What's funny is that the song is all about, I pulled up the lyrics just for this, is do you want to be my angel? Give it up to me. Do you want to be my angel? Everybody thought it was about like, dude wants to take this chick's virginity.
Sure.
The more you listen to the song, it's about a dude who wants to take a girl behind the lake and murder her. Do you want to be my angel? Meaning, you will be a ghost when I'm through with you.
Okay.
Totally different song.
A little bit.
And it's this kind of, it gets crazy aggressive the more the song goes on. I swear if you heard it, you'd know it.
I might. Wait, hang on. Let me listen to the bed. Oh, yeah! Absolutely!
A funny story about this song.
Hatton's going to punch me in the throat.
Maybe they don't realize I add the beds in post.
Shh!
Pulling back the curtain, Oz.
Fuck.
So there's this spot where the song gets really quiet, and the singer kind of dips in with the guitar, the bass line. Doom, 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 doom. Do you want to die? And you're like, where's this going?
Yeah.
Do you want to die? A friend of mine and I were on our way to Sterling Forest, and we were going for New York Renaissance Festival, as we tended to do back then. And you know the road to Sterling Forest is not a safe road at times.
No.
No, you're going around big curves and whatnot. And right when the song fucking hits where he's screaming that, do you wanna die? My buddy Chris jams on the gas and starts swinging around corners because he's so fucking into the song. And
sure.
I am damn near dying.
Exactly. Need a change of pants.
Oh. But to this day, we'll never forget it.
Yeah, so, of course. Now, the more you keep singing it, it's kind of...
It's in there somewhere.
Something's hitting in the back of my brain.
It was a
that
huge,
I would remember it.
For a minute.
Yeah.
All over 92.3, they played it pretty nonstop.
Okay.
That's our local K-Rock.
Yeah. Not anymore, though, I don't think.
Not anymore, no. Now it's just Hippity Hop.
Yeah.
So yeah, they have a bunch of other albums. I know a friend of mine, Whisper, loves the Toadies, but the whole album's... It's dated 90s. You listen to it and you're like, people really liked all of this. Yes, we loved it. We also loved everything on Nirvana that they ever did.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true.
Another one-hit wonder band.
You know what group I'm glad is not on any of our lists? I mean, obviously, because they're... I wouldn't classify them as a one-hit wonder band, but I would think most of the common populace might think they are.
Spice Girls?
OK Go.
I love OK Go!
Most people only know them from the treadmill video.
Oh my god, they have so many other really, really great fucking songs.
They're fantastic. And I was just, for some reason, you're singing this and I'm thinking about, you know, I would want to find an episode just to be able to talk about a lot of their music because I love some of their stuff.
We can do a music video episode.
Yeah, their videos are very innovative. But most people know them from that whole...
the treadmill
video. Yeah.
They have another, for those who don't know, go watch, they have another for This Too Shall Pass, which is a huge Rube Goldberg machine. It's a one-shot music video similar to the treadmill.
It's not a one-shot.
It's not.
It's very cleverly edited, but there were people that, after that came out, that dissected it, and there are two scenes where you can see that they've blended two together.
Oh, that makes me sad.
But it's a three-shot music video, which is still impressive because it's like a five-minute song of Rube Goldberg mechanics.
Yeah, with the bowling ball.
But have you seen the other video of that, too? There's two videos for This Too Shall Pass.
Oh, I did not know there was another one. No.
Oh, yeah. There's one where they're dressed as marching band people, and they're in, like, the woods in a field, and they get to the first guitar solo chorus kind of thing at the end of the first chorus.
Yeah.
And about 15 marching band musicians in full ghillie suits lying on the grass pop up with their instruments and start playing, and then they move over, and like 30 more pop up out of the grass, and then it becomes this giant, like 200-piece marching band that starts doing like the spirals and the pass-throughs for it. But it's great. Their video WTF, I don't know if you've ever seen that one.
Is that the one with the wall, the weird wall paintings?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, that's not the one.
No,
there's one where they have a special camera where certain colors stick to the camera. So it's a blue background. You walk across with a yellow shirt, and like your yellow shirt kind of bleeds and sticks as you walk, almost like vapor trail like. Mm-hmm. Very weird. I'll show it to you.
Yeah, please.
But OK Go is good stuff. Not a one hit wonder though.
No, definitely not. Because they came out after the year 2005 ish.
Yeah.
And there's no more one hit wonders.
Right. They were on Rock Band. That song. Here We Go Again.
Yeah. They have like a handful of songs that I listen that are on constant remix for me.
Yeah.
So. What one-hit wonders do our fans like?
It's a good call.
I think we should ask them.
I would dare say there might not be any that we've listed.
I bet there's a handful that they like that we don't.
Yeah, I would love to hear from them.
And we missed out. I mean, we could literally do two more episodes of just listing off songs. Although they would be boring, the show is just Wheatus, Teenage Dirtbag.
It becomes like the guy that reads the score and the time in Battle Royal. Just at the end of every day. Sector 7 bombed. 17 people are dead. See you tomorrow.
Boop. Primitive radio gods standing outside a broken phone booth with
money
in my hand.
8, 15, 16, 23, 42. I haven't done a Lost reference in years. I had to throw
it out. I know. I was actually thinking you forgot all about the show.
No. Oh.
So please go to the Facebook and tell us what you would like to hear said in a monotone voice in One Hit Wonders Part 2.
Yeah, the Facebook, the Twitter, the email.
We have all of those. And we also have that new social media that everybody started to leave Facebook, but we have one of those now.
Yeah.
Whatever
it
is.
It's the thing that Jim Carrey beams directly into your brain from Batman Begins or Returns. No, Forever. Batman Forever, I think it was, wasn't it? No.
I don't know. It's the one...
The movie was 50 years ago. How am I supposed to remember back that far?
Now that Unicron is eating the planet.
Should Skynet allow us to come back for a second episode, please let us know what you would like us to record.
This show's been less about one-hit wonders and how far can we send this show into the future,
exactly.
Says Hologram Hatton.
The future?
Ding, 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 ding.
Oh.
No, it's Simpsons. I always do that with the Jetsons song.
Terrible.
There we go.
Terrible.
Stop song! So, yeah.
Had we done this show first, we may have been a one-hit wonder podcast. It's a good thing we kind of kept this one in the bank for a while.
Yeah, exactly. Thank God we recorded two today.
Built up a bank of followers that we can lose.
So this has been the most frenetically strange episode in a really long time, but man, I fucking laughed.
Yeah, oh yeah, good stuff.
So find us on internet. You can find us there. We're all over it. And internet, too.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
I'm James Hatton.
I am Podcast Rob.
We'll see you guys in the future.
The future?
Bye.
Bellies in the back, sweet singers in the front, cruising down the freeway in the hot, hot sun. Suddenly red blue lights flash us from behind, loud voice booming, please step out onto the line. Ballet bridge words of comfort, Cena just hides her eyes, policeman taps the shades and sells a Chevy 69. How bizarre, how bizarre, how bizarre. Destination unknown as we're pulling for some gas. Officially placed a poster reveals a smile from the pack. Elephants and acrobats, lion, snakes, monkey. Bella speaks righteous, Sister Cena says funky. How bizarre, how bizarre, how bizarre.
Ooh, baby.